You're listening to the Primal Way podcast, where every week we explore what it means to live a primal life and how in today's busy world, we can get back to living the primal way. Well, hey, Andrea, welcome to the Primal Way podcast.
Hey, Atreyu. Thank you.
Yeah, it's really good to have you on the show. And for all the listeners who are just now joining us, thank you, first of all, for listening to the podcast. And I wanted to just give you a heads up with Andrea and myself. We just actually connected over the Primal Health Coaching Institute, and her story really resonated with me. And I just thought it would be really awesome for you guys to be able to hear her story and just to get to know her journey and what she's done to get to where she is today and the success she's had and not only her health, but her family as well. And so, Andrea, let's go ahead and just tell me about your story a little bit. You know, what got you into health and wellness? Have you always been interested in health?
Well, in some ways, I've always been interested in health and wellness. I've always been into sports and competing. So in that respect, always kind of taking care of my body has been part of it. But, but as always, you have these moments that are impactful in your life. And so one that really comes to mind is about maybe 12 years ago when, you know, I had several things happening at the same time and really got me to make changes, like what we've been talking about with health and wellness, you know, as far as diet and even lifestyle and how you cope with stress and approach difficult things. So with the eating side, I'm a parent, so I have kids. And at the time, one of my children, she's 13 now, but at the time she was about 18 months, so a little toddler. And she was just sick all the time. Like every couple of weeks she would have fevers, like, and high fevers, like 103.
Oh, wow.
And throwing up and constant diarrhea, skin rashes, you know, recurrent ear infections. She was getting to the point where the ear infections were getting in the way of her speech because, you know, it affects the way you hear. So you can't, when you have an ear infection, it's harder to listen to hear background noises or hear further away. So you have to be close to somebody for them to really hear you.
Yeah.
And so she was missing a lot of that listening and hearing. And so it was starting to impact her speech and ability to communicate, which in turn would also make her frustrated because she wanted to explain something or wanted something but couldn't communicate. So as a parent, that was, you know, that affected everyone, right, in the family. And you start thinking, you know, I know there's something wrong. Like, this is not normal. But it's hard to pinpoint what it was because it wasn't something like specific. And so, I have a twin sister. I'm a fraternal twin. And so I would talk to her because her child was the same age as mine, essentially. And her child had food allergies where he would, you know, his throat would swell up and he would get a skin rash like right away if he ate certain foods. And so I'm talking to her, I'm like, well, my child has some similar symptoms, but it's not quite the same. Like, you know, she doesn't break out in hives or, you know, she doesn't, her throat doesn't swell up like an allergic reaction. But, you know, I think there's something to this. So I don't know exactly what gave me the idea, but I thought, well, let me look at her diet, you know, what she's eating. And that's where I looked up, you know, the top five common foods that people can be allergic or have a reaction to. So what they include, like soy, dairy, peanuts, corn, gluten is a big one. And so I just eliminated all those things from her diet, like just changed everything. And yeah, in doing so, you know, these things run in families, right? You know, if your child is allergic or reacts to something, you know, might be that you might have that too. And so in the process, I was like, well, let me change those things too, because I could maybe have, you know, these sensitivities also, and I'm just not as aware of it. And so that's what I did. So I changed all those things. And, you know, as I was telling you before we started recording, it made a huge difference. Before, I couldn't take her to the swimming pool because the chlorine would be too much on her skin. Her skin would turn red and have a rash. And she would be like that for days. Like, it would take days to recover just from that exposure. You know, same thing with, you know, she could start preschool soon. And at the time, I didn't know if she could even go to school because she was sick all the time, because she would have to miss so much. So all that changed when we changed her diet. And it didn't take that long. It was like a matter of months, like, where there were some significant changes. You know, like in her skin, that was pretty soon. And then, you know, with the her not being as sick took a little bit longer, but, you know, there were the periods of her being between being sick got longer. I know her immune system's, you know, still a little bit sensitive, but it was way better than before. You know, yeah. And then also with her speech, you know, that started improving on its own. And also, you know, so there was those physical changes, but it also translated to her overall way of being, really. Mm-hmm. Like, she was a much happier kid. She would have less tantrums. She was just, like, more easygoing, like, just easier to be with, happier. So it's just overall, it made a huge difference.
Yeah, and I bet it made a big difference, you know, that you were doing it alongside with her too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's interesting, you know, not a lot of, you know, maybe, you know, it's just, that's how I am, but I don't think all parents would recognize something like that, that they maybe would have the same kind of issues and be willing to try that too, you know. That's really cool that you did that.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, thank you.
Yeah. And it's really, really sad, you know, how a lot of schools and a lot of doctors automatically, when they see kids that are like that, you know, super hyper or super whatever, they're more interested in just slapping on the medication that pairs up with those symptoms. And they'd rather go that route than realizing that the food can have such an impact like it did with your daughter.
Yeah, I think it's hard because it's kind of these nebulous symptoms, right? And
mm-hmm.
it's nothing like specific that correlates one-to-one with something else. So you kind of have to take them as a whole and look at, you know, a cluster of symptoms.
Yeah.
And we got her tested for some things, but it wasn't like she had a food allergy where that can, I think, be more easily tested than a sensitivity or like a more of a digestion issue. Unless you get to the severe side where it's really bad, then, you know, there might be markers that come back that are easier to recognize. But you don't want to wait that long because, you know, some of that damage, you know, if you start damaging the intestinal tract, you know, that's a hard thing to rebound from.
Definitely. Yeah. And I can relate to that. When I, you know, not to interrupt your story, but I, all the time I would have these mouth sores that were unbearable. I could barely move my mouth. I could barely talk without cringing in pain. And as a teenager, my back and my face was covered in these boils, you know, and I just thought, this is just something I'm going through, you know, that it's just normal. But every time I would ask a doctor or a dentist about, you know, how to deal with the mouth sores or how to deal with the acne, they would just, on the acne side, just recommend this medication or topical thing that never really did anything other than dried my skin out. And then mouth sores never, ever, they could, I mean, there was no suggestions. It was just like, man, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is your profession and you still don't have an answer.
Mm.
You know, it's that kind of thing, you know, that it's just sad how the medical industry, you know, it's everybody goes to them, you know, thinking they've got the answer. And in some cases, you know, it's obvious, you know, anything that's acute, that's what a doctor's there for. You know, they're there to take care of something like that, like a heart attack or a stroke, or a broken leg, that kind of thing. But when it comes to the more, what's the word I'm looking for? the things that are on a constant, chronic, that's the word, you know, chronic diseases and things like that, you know, that it's more like a Band-Aid than figuring out the root causes. And, you know, it's just, it's sad. And I think you can relate to that.
Yeah.
Just with the conversation we had prior to this.
Yeah. And so what helped you with, like, let's say the mouth sores? What have you found things that help with that?
Like, I didn't ever have food allergies. You know, I wasn't allergic to anything, you know, that I was aware of. But I discovered that I was extremely sensitive to gluten. And when I started cutting, you know, sugar and gluten, and I realized that I'm super sensitive to artificial coloring, and certain artificial sweeteners.
Yeah.
I just have a super bad negative reaction. Like my migraines would go away. My mouth sores. I can't remember the last time I had a mouth sore.
Awesome for you.
I know.
I'm sure those are not pleasant.
Oh, they're not. And the doctors would always tell me, you know, it's usually an indication of stress. And or you're getting sick or you're in the middle of being sick. And I could relate to that because, you know, I would get stressed a lot and they would flare up even worse. Or I used to get sick a lot too, constantly. And I would just suffer through it. I would go to work because I was out of sick time, you know, like, but I would get these incredible mouth sores every time I was getting sick. It was like within a matter of seconds, it would show up. The moment I felt like I was getting sick, because my body could not, it was already under enough trying to deal with all the internal battles, you know, that once anything came in, you know, that was foreign, my body pretty much just shut down and was fighting itself. And once I got rid of those things and realized that that was the connection, that there was a gut issue going on, you know, my whole world changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it makes other things easier because, you know, that stress on your body, you know, inflammation, like you said, those chronic things, I mean, they all add up. You know, it can be from food, then your life, and all those things, they go on top of each other, and you can only handle so much. So
yeah.
It does spill over to other parts of your life. And, you know, and as we were talking as well, when my daughter was sick, at the same time, my mom almost died at that time. And, you know, she had a stroke that left her paralyzed on the right side. And she spent months in the hospital. We weren't sure if she was going to be able to talk, to breathe on her own, to eat. You know, we weren't sure what her life was going to be like. And slowly, some of those things did come back, and she did live for like 7 years after that. But that was also something that really affected me, you know.
Yeah,
and also prompted me to make the dietary changes too, because, you know, with stroke and heart disease, there's a big inflammation component to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we were talking with stress and those make those things worse, right? It affects our health, our longevity. And I could see myself in her. I had some of the same habits and patterns of dealing with stress. And I thought to myself, you know, if I don't change the way I approach and deal with life, you know, that may be me. And she was 61 at the time. And going back to what you mentioned with doctors, you know, through the medical eyes, she was healthy. You know, her blood pressure wasn't that high. You know, maybe she had a little bit of high cholesterol, but nothing really out of the ordinary that would make you suspect that this would be coming. And so it took everybody by surprise.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, it is scary. So yeah, so that really also kind of stops you on your tracks. And you're like, well, you know, and you realize like, hey, my opportunity is now. Like I have time now where I can make changes.
Yeah. And that's fortunate. It's fortunate for you because, you know, a lot of times it takes something like that in your own life to make you realize that you need to change, you know. And it's good that it's a terrible situation, obviously, but, you know, in a way it's somewhat of a blessing because you were able to see some of the similar signs and make an early change, hopefully early enough to, make it so this is never an issue.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And well, and then from there, you know, you reach this point. I don't, and I'm curious how you deal with this part, because, you know, for me, you have some tools that you use, right? You know, to cope with stress and, mm-hmm. you know, what's going on in our bodies, even, you know, with all those cold sores and getting sick. You know, you have some tools and you rely on them and you use them. And, you know, there's moments where you're like, man, the tools I have, they're not enough. Like, I'm trying, but what I know, how I can do things, it's not enough. My skill set is not enough to handle what's mm-hmm. in front of me. And that was like another eye opener in reflecting on that, is like, I need to upgrade my skills, my skill right. set. And I can't do it just on my own, because I have been doing it on my own. And this is where I am doing it on my own. I need help, like somebody else outside of me that can teach me things and show me things I'm not even aware of. Because that's the other part, is, you know, when you're sick, you might have an idea of what it's like to feel better, but it's still limited by your experience and your idea of an experience.
Yeah.
And there's that whole world outside of that that you're not even cognizant of. And I think that's where, you know, having a mentor, a coach, or therapy, whatever you want to call it, that's where you really need somebody to help you get to that level and that place in life.
Yeah, you need a somewhat of an objective perspective outside of your own little world sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, for me, I wanted that really bad, as somebody that could just show me. I'm like, there's got to be something better out there, something different. And, you know, my resources were extremely limited. So, you know, podcasts being free and stuff, I started listening to a bunch of podcasts. I listened to Rob Wolf and Primal Blueprint and Abel James. And, you know, I started listening to all these podcasts, you know, Fat Burning Man and stuff. And I'm just like, so I got really interested, because they were talking about some, you know, similar things that I was dealing with. And I was like, huh, maybe I should give this paleo thing a try. And, you know, I switched into paleo, you know, kind of blindly. I got a book about, you know, basics for paleo and stuff. And I was reading how food interacts with your body, which was extremely fascinating to me. And so, you know, that helped me to figure out, okay, well, if I eliminate that, how am I going to feel? And I would play with that kind of stuff. But I was still completely alone in it, really, you know, just trying to piece it all together. But it just got frustrating. And I can't remember when it was. About 2 years ago, I was listening to Primal Blueprint, like I said, and they started talking about the health coaching program. And I was like, huh, you know, that's that. I wonder if there's some health coaches out there or something like that. And then, you know, I kept hearing it because I kept listening. I was like, you know, as much as I love helping people and I love just the science behind it. I'm not a super scientific guy, but, you know, I've always been fascinated by that kind of stuff. I was like, why don't I, you know, because I'm not going to ever probably have my own coach. Why don't I go ahead and actually start the course? And if I can then impact my own health through what I'm learning, maybe I can also impact my family and maybe, you know, eventually start coaching. And, you know, that's what I did. But I also, through that, once I locked into that, I discovered the whole Primal, you know, community. And then I wasn't alone through the whole process, because even though I was learning it, it was so daunting and so confusing. I was like, you know, trying to navigate all the things that my body was going through and how to counter the, you know, the changes and, you know, get through it smoothly. And, you know, before I really understood how my body reacted to stuff, but it made a huge difference for sure.
Yeah. And I find it really helpful, because there's a lot of people in that community that know a lot more about the science than I do. So it's nice sometimes to, you know, follow those questions that people have and learn from other people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and you said you wanted to hear a little bit more about the stress side of things. I mean, I can't really go into my whole life story, but
oh, come on, you know. We got like 5 minutes, right? It was not going to take that long.
Yeah, no, it's a really long story, but my I was born in Germany, like I had mentioned. That's kind of where my name comes from. And but right about when we moved back to the States when I was 3 years old, because I was born over there, my parents actually split. And then I moved with my dad from Connecticut out to Montana, and which is where his parents were and all that stuff. And it was an extremely abusive situation. And, you know, so my whole childhood was stressful because I would dream about my mom all the time. And I always thought it was my fault, you know, so there was that stress. And and then I was the bigger brother. I had a little brother, and, you know, so I was there to protect him in all of the things that we were going through. And, you know, fast forward, you know, it was just an abusive situation to keep it short. And finally, my dad remarried when I was 14. And so that was a whole new stress world for me. And
just a small transition in your life.
Right? Yeah. You know, so, I mean, there was some blessings to that. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. You know, there was some definite things I think God intended, you know, to have happened through that. And I'm very thankful for that. But it added a whole new level of stresses. And, you know, I finally moved out to go to college. And, well, actually, rewind, before college and everything, I think it was my junior year, my dad went into shock and was rushed to the hospital while I was at school. Oh. And we found out he had diabetes.
Oh.
And he apparently had it for a long time, but he was so far,
you know,
to the extreme that he was about to die, kind of a situation.
Yeah.
And it kind of rocked my world, like, you know, that there was something to how you live, you know, like it kind of opened my eyes a little bit. And so then I started looking at myself and looking at my dad's whole side of the family, and a lot of them had diabetes and they were overweight. And, you know, I was starting to think, well, is this going to be me? You know, like, you know, so there was that added on stress again. And then I leave for college. I was the first one in my family to go to college. And, you know, so there was that pressure. And then I was 1800 miles away from my family, you know, and I was in college, and then I got depressed and I got extremely sick and I was gaining a ton of weight. And, you know, there's all those added stressors and all this stuff. And it just cripples you.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it was an endless cycle at that point. And, you know, it wasn't until, you see, this is why we can't go through my whole life story, but okay. There's so many nuances to my story, but it wasn't until I got my food in check that I was able to get my emotional wellness in check, because not only was my body reacting, but my brain was still reacting to it, and my adrenal glands and everything else that's involved. And I can't even imagine going back to the weight of stress I was under now that I am where I am now. It's just crazy. And I'm sure you can relate with all the, you know, you were telling me about your mom having a stroke, and you mentioned a little bit about your daughter and the stress that she was going through. I'm sure you can relate to that too.
Yeah, and then throughout the years, there's been other times where my daughter's been hospitalized. And I distinctly remember one time, and this is when, you know, sadly, my mom went into the hospital for the last time. But so my mom went into the hospital, the ICU, and I live in Colorado and my parents live in New Hampshire. So I flew to New Hampshire to go see her. And at the same, like within the next day, I get a phone call that my daughter's in the hospital at same time. And I'm like, okay, I don't know how I'm supposed to cope with this. Like, I physically cannot be in two places at once right now. And so I decided to stay with my mom because we weren't sure if she was going to leave the hospital. And with my daughter, it wasn't as severe. So yeah, you have those moments where you're like, any option, I don't like any of these options, you know, how am I supposed to cope? You know, there's nothing like really I can do about these things. And, you know, and going back to you, some of those threads in your story is, is that's what's really difficult sometimes with, you know, stress and traumas, and is, you know, that lack of choice. And even just being physically sick, you know, those, it limits your choices and mm-hmm. how you can choose. And so, well, part of what I do now is I teach yoga, and I do focus more on like trauma populations. And
yeah, I was going to ask you, yeah. what you do today and how do you deal with stress and stuff? Mm-hmm.
And so I look at some of these tools too, that affect choice, right? Because I think before we start recording, we started to get into it a little bit more, and it's hard to know where to start because, you know, as you get into topics you're really interested about, you can go on and on. And
yeah, definitely.
And so with trauma, and especially unresolved trauma, and, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, it affects something that really affects you and stays with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so what tends to happen is, you know, I like to think of, you know, these stressors, and it could be, you know, outside stress, you know, physical body stress, you know, getting sick, being inflamed, eating foods that, again, that cause that inflammatory response. Is think of a bucket, and you're just adding things to the bucket, right? And mm-hmm. You can only take so much. And, you know, there's, even if you have a little faucet underneath that kind of relieves some of the pressure, you know, there's only like a little bit of water that gets let out at the bottom. So it's easy to get overwhelmed, right? So these things, you know, can make it so that we become overwhelmed easily. And it's like you were saying, it's hard not to take it personally. You start to wonder, like, what's wrong with me? Like, you look around and, you know, other people can eat these foods. Other people can go to college. Other people have their life figured out and seem to be doing fine. And here I am, and it's, you know, I have one bad conversation with somebody, and it takes me like the whole next day to feel normal again.
Yeah.
Or I eat something and I just feel like crap and I need to lay down. I don't have the energy to go out. And it's hard because it becomes a like downward spiral.
And the worst part is that, you know, like you're saying, you see other people that seem so happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how is it they have their life figured out?
And, yeah.
And the whole time they're probably looking at us thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know that part, but, you know.
Not always, but yeah, I think there's like, it's a lot more than we think. I don't know if you
want my life sometimes, but but yeah, for sure. And it's demoralizing. And so there's like, when you're sick, you're not going to be as social, right?
Yeah.
And, like, you're tired. Like, I don't want to go out. I just want to go sit and watch TV. And then even just your ability to engage with people. If you're depressed or you're physically not feeling well, like, it's going to show up in your face and in how you talk to somebody. And then what do you have to talk about? Like, hey, do you want to hear about my cold sores, like my rashes? You know, we can talk about that.
Yeah. I hated it so much. Just like you're saying, I you know, what do you possibly talk about? I got so depressed that I would stay up all night watching TV. That would be my daytime, and I would sleep during the day so I could avoid people.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for 3 weeks before I finally broke down physically.
Yeah.
Because I just could deal with people.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom, I didn't say this part of my story, but I found out my mom had a blood disorder, and one of my classmates that I grew up with and my hometown, she died, and then another one died, and it was just like back to back.
Oh,
and
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I just went down this spiral, like you're saying, and I just didn't have any way out of it until my body finally just shut me down
mm-hmm.
so I could recover a little bit.
Yeah. But. Yeah, and then, you know, and then to change that around, you know, it is a hard journey. And, you know, as we mentioned before, that's where, you know, getting this outside help can really be a lifesaver, you know.
It really can,
and you know, it can keep you on track and also give you hope, you know, that because you may not see that you're making progress, so you may feel like, well, my life still sucks, I still feel crappy, but somebody mm-hmm. else that has already been there or that's worked with people and has seen other people's journey can provide that reassurance, like, no, this is just part of it, it takes time for your body to heal, but you know, you're on your way, and they can even help you tune into moments that you do feel better. Because, you know, maybe you're not completely better, but you might have moments where you feel better than before.
Definitely.
And so they can kind of point those out and say, well, you know, just hearing you talk, there's a difference there, and to help you notice it. Because those are things you can take with you, because, you know, those sessions only last like maybe an hour, right? And then you go home and you're on your own. And that's when, you know, those fear storms hit, or that's when, you know, you feel really bad, is when you're on your own. And to be able to go back to those moments, like, oh, well, the person said I am getting better, and that, you know, they did notice a difference. And so those are little nuggets that you get to take with you, and that can help you when, you know, you don't have somebody by your side to do that for you.
Yeah. And I even encourage people that I work with to, you know, make a log of some kind, you know, take pictures of your journey and, you know, write down, you know, victory moments and those kinds of things, because then, you know, and this is just out of my own experience, when I've looked back at these things, I didn't even remember that. And I'm like, wow, I was like, I can't believe I've come that far, or, you know, man, that was a really good day. And how could I have forgotten something like that? And it's just encouraging, you know, to have something to look back at if you don't have somebody right there in your corner, you know, at all times. So what do you, you know, you were talking about, you know, you do yoga and all that kind of stuff. What, you know, what do you do on a daily basis, or how can you tell when you're getting stressed? You know, what do you do to reduce that? Do you have like a technique or things you like to do?
I have several, and I have things I use on myself, and I use it with my kids at the same time as well. And well, with stress, so sometimes people, if you're really stressed, it's hard to notice it in yourself. Unless, like, you use times where you pause, because that would be the first thing, is to get in the habit of taking pauses. And I like to think of, like, transitions are great times to take a little pause. Like, and it can be small. You can, okay, you're getting ready to get out of the car, right? You got to work and you're parked in the parking lot and you're ready to go to, you know, get out of the car and go to work. I mean, that's a great moment where you can pause and even just take a minute and just sit there and just feel yourself in the chair. You know, your body's there, you're breathing, just notice your breath. You know, maybe look around you, notice something pleasant in nature, or even just think of a nice, like, memory, like, or even just sipping a warm cup of tea or coffee, like, oh, just take a moment to just kind of settle, just be right where you are. And then, you know, after a minute or so, you know, we can get up and go to work. You know, and same thing, having moments like that throughout the day where you're just taking a pause, and it's almost like taking a pulse of how you're doing. Mm-hmm. And the more you do it, you'll start to notice, you know, as you just kind of allow yourself to settle, like, oh yeah, I have been stressed. Oh yeah, my shoulders are tight, or man, my jaw is sore. You know, we hold a lot of tension in our faces a lot. Or man, I don't feel quite myself. Like, you know, I feel a little run down. Or so just taking those pauses, and it's good to have practices that help you do that. You know, if you can take, you know, 10 minutes in the morning to meditate. And I know that's a very trendy word. And I have, and actually I do my meditation laying down, because sometimes I'm tired. So I just do it laying down. Sometimes I'm even in bed, you know, I just lay for 10 minutes. And it's, again, it's just a chance to slow it down and just notice my breath and my breathing. Physiologically, it really helps to lengthen the exhale. So you were saying when you're stressed out, you tend to, there's usually changes in your breathing patterns. Most of the time, definitely, you take those short breaths and you tend to hold your breath. So you're not getting, you know, that full inhale and exhale. So one thing you can just start to do right away is just to bring attention to your breathing. And as you kind of start to even it out, you can even begin to extend the exhale a little bit, and that will just calm your whole nervous system down and kind of allow you to settle and begin to slow down your heart rate. So that's a one thing you can start doing right away if you start to notice, you know, those, going back to your question with signs of stress. Again, look for changes, you know, changes in your breathing pattern, in your heart rate, and even like skin temperature. Sometimes we can start to sweat or get cold. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it also happens talking to people, especially if you're in a heated conversation, you can start to notice, like, either you start to get really cold or you start to sweat a lot. And so just to have those moments where you're checking in with yourself, like, okay, what's my breathing doing? Oh, yeah, I'm not really breathing. I'm holding my breath. So just, okay, exhale. And that's when you can get other people involved. Like with my kids, like, okay, let's just take a little break. Just breathe right now. You know, why don't you just take an exhale and just pause the conversation. Like, you're allowed to take a little time out, you know.
Yeah, that's encouraging that you said all that, you know, because I can connect with a lot of those things. I like the aspect of meditation is the breathing part of it and the focusing on like the different parts of my body and stuff, mm-hmm. and how I'm feeling at that time. But I love breathing exercises, you know, and when you said that the hot skin and stuff, I can completely relate because I work at a corporate office and I'll have moments throughout my day where I realize I've gone for a long period of time where I've been working really hard on something. And all of a sudden I'll start to sweat and my vision starts to get a little blurry and I'm like, man, like, yeah. I just need to relax, mm-hmm. and, you know, breathe in. And there's a lot of, I researched a lot of different breathing techniques and stuff. And Wim Hof is a really cool one, but not practical when you're sitting at your desk, but I've done it and it's really fascinating the impact it had on my body. But I really like the method of breathing in for 5 seconds, as deep as I can, holding it for 20 and then out for 10, mm-hmm. because man, does that slow me down? It eases me out really well. And I'd be interested to know what kind of, you know, if you have like specific breathing techniques you like to do, but that one seems to be one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. I do. You know, once you get into techniques, you'll find, you know, some people prefer this or prefer that. So just before we start on those, you know, whatever you find that works for you and you notice a difference, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody's unique. Yeah. There's not one way to do something.
Yeah, so there's no one way. And it can be a little confusing once you start looking at it. And that's why I try to keep it simple as far as what we were talking about with just kind of notice like a rhythm to your breathing. You know, you'll have a natural rhythm, you know, inhaling, mm-hmm. you know, there's a slight pause, exhale, maybe a slight pause and inhale. And for me, like sometimes it's hard to stay focused. Like my mind will start to kind of wander. So I like to sometimes count the breath like you were doing, and it helps me focus on something.
Yeah,
and definitely. So I'll start counting. I usually do, and it depends if you count for how you fast or slow you count, right? You can just start. An easy one is just to, let's say, count for three and exhale for three, and just start with an even inhales and exhale. And as that becomes easy and relaxing, you can start including, you know, as you're doing that pause and counting that time as you inhale before you exhale, and then lengthening that exhale. And in yoga, there's certain ratios that you can use once you start those counts. Let's see if I can. So let's say if you inhale for three counts and then you pause. Sometimes you would pause for like 3 to 4 times the amount of the inhale. And then your mm-hmm. exhale will be, what, I think about 3 times the length of your inhale or so. Or at least twice as long. And then after you exhale, you would wait like a count of three, and then you start.
Yeah, that sounds similar to what I'm talking about. I think it's 4 times the inhale, half the mm-hmm. the, or, you know, twice as much as the inhale for the exhale part. But yeah.
But at the same time, cool. I don't want, because it can also become like this cognitive exercise, and that's not really the point, right? The point is to allow your body to relax and to to soften the breath. So if you find yourself straining because you want to hit a mark, you know, maybe it's a little bit counterproductive to what you're actually trying to do.
Yeah. I find when I hit that inhale and then I hold it, mm-hmm. sometimes I'm just such in a good place when I'm there that I forget.
Yeah.
And my timer goes off saying, hey, you should exhale. And I'm like, oh, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
it's I'm relaxed at that point. Yeah.
Well, and also it has to do with, like, let's say you're coming down with a cold or you're not feeling well, it's going to affect that breathing pattern too, and your ability to do that. You might find it's harder. Mm-hmm. So it's just things to keep in mind as you practice and not to be so hard on yourself. So the other one I like to do is the alternate nostril breathing. I really like that one. I don't know if are you familiar with it?
I've tried it. I didn't probably do it enough and or understand it enough to really get deep. So I'm really interested to hear what you have to say.
So, and you know, it's an audio, so I'll do my best to describe it. It's a little easier if you have a visual, but you know, you can just follow along. So you'll be using your thumb and your ring finger. And traditionally they say to use your right hand, but in India that would be the case because they use their left hand to wipe themselves. So they consider their left hand unclean. So that's where that comes from. But
yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and maybe there's other reasons, but I'm not as a traditionalist, so I would just say, you know, pick whatever hand you'd like. So I'll be using your thumb and your ring finger. And you'll close off. Right now I'm using my left hand. So I'll place my left thumb on my left nostril. So I'm closing it off. So I can only breathe through my right nostril right now. So then I would exhale through the right nostril. And then when the next inhale, I'll inhale through that same right nostril. And then I'll use my ring finger to kind of switch sides. So I'll close off the right nostril and release the thumb so that I can exhale through that left side. It's almost like doing an inverted U with your breath. If you picture in your head, you know, the breath coming up through one nostril, crossing mm-hmm. over to the other side, and then descending through the other one. And then you stay on that side to inhale, and then you cross over to exhale on the other side. So you're kind of going back and forth in this inverted U.
And now, what is that good for? What is it? What's the purpose of it? Or what have you noticed that it affects?
Well, there's several things. Like one is going back to having your mind wander. Like let's say you try to meditate and it's difficult to focus. Like you can't just check out because you have to think about, okay, well, what side am I on? You have to keep doing something. So you have to stay engaged.
Yeah.
And then physiologically, you're forcing, you're crossing the midline basically. So, you know, your brain has two hemispheres, the right and the left, and they communicate back and forth. So you're actually working on developing also that communication between the left and right hemisphere, which is good. You want a connected brain. You know, we get into trouble when our brains are not integrated and our different brain regions don't talk to each other. That's not usually a good thing. Like I think in autism, there's something like that going on. And so it helps with that integration in the brain that from the left and right hemisphere, because you know, you're using one side of the brain, then the other side and back and forth.
Yeah. That's really cool. I'm going to have to try doing that.
Yeah.
Maybe once a day I'll incorporate that in my routine or something, just for the sake of, you know, balancing myself out. Mm-hmm. You know, and for the sake of time, I have one last question. If there's one thing you could tell your younger you, what advice would you give yourself?
Ooh, I'm trying to picture myself in my head, you know, as a little girl, right? I think the biggest thing is like that reassurance that it's going to be okay. You're going to turn out okay. And that, you know, even though there's these ups and downs, you get disappointed, you get hurt, you have successes, you celebrate this, and, you know, this roller coaster, right? That if you take that as a whole, that it's okay. Like, that you can enjoy that ride, you know, the ups and downs, and just to focus on that more more than those ups and downs. It's just to be there with those experiences and enjoy that ride. I think that's where it's at, really. Like, that's, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So all you really have is right now, and you can enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that a lot. That's really cool. Well, I appreciate it so much, you know, listening to your story and hearing your vulnerability. And I really hope maybe one day we can have you back on the podcast and just see how things are going and maybe hear a little bit about your coaching and other things that you're doing. And but it was really good having you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Treyu. Yeah, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. You know, I've been practicing in my head.
So. Yeah, you definitely got it right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. I find it fun, my name. My dad always thought it would be a difficulty in my life, but he actually hyphenated my middle name. It's Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Is the first part of my middle name, just in case. But I've only ever once in my life had to use it.
Uh-huh.
It was an elderly guy I was doing lawn work for, and he could not figure out what I was saying. Mm-hmm. So I said, just call me Ben.
Oh.
But that backfired on me because I'd never once in my entire life been called that. So when he was calling across the yard for me, I had no idea. You know? So what, that made him very angry.
Oh, no.
So that was
That'll
the last
time That'll
be a story
for
that.
Another time.
Yeah. But no, I find it fun listening to people try and have no grudges against anybody making a mistake on my name.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, Andrea, I really appreciated it, and I thoroughly enjoyed your story, and it inspired me, definitely. I connected on a lot of levels, and I'm definitely going to try that breathing technique, throw that into the mix, and I look forward to the next time we get a chance to talk.
Yeah, and you can tell me how it's going or what you notice with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I'll definitely reach out.
All right. Take care.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Primal Way podcast. Please click the subscribe button if you enjoyed the podcast and share the podcast with your friends and loved ones. Remember, you have control over your own life, and you can begin living the primal way today. See you next week.